You are listening to Radio Aryan, Red Pill Radio for the awakened white masses at RadioAryan.com.
Right, our third speaker today is a young man from Swansea, South Wales, Mr. Alex Davis, please.
Hello everyone.
Hello.
How are we today?
Fantastic.
Brilliant. Okay, so today I would like to speak about one of those things that ever since I became involved in nationalism, it's something I've heard ad nauseum, time and time again, persistent calls for this shibboleth of unity, nationalist unity. If we could all just get together in one organisation, or for one demonstration, or in one room, we will have that victory that we've been searching for so many years. And when we talk about unity, let's just analyse the concept and the use of the term unity, the sort of context that we use it in when we talk about it in nationalist circles. So the first sort of context that we hear it in is things like unity demonstrations, a sort of tactical unity where we get together for a short amount of time and we pool our strength together, we pool our resources to show our strength as a movement. The Dover demonstrations could be an example of this, of where a dozen, 15, however many different splintered nationalist groups there are, all get together and send all their membership down to Dover or to Liverpool or to all the numerous towns where nationalists have demonstrated over the past several years. And what's the problem with this? People would say, brilliant, we're all getting together, we're all going out on the streets, we're going to smash the Reds, we're going to show our strength and show the people that we mean business. Fantastic. What? How can we disagree with that? Well, and some would say, we don't compromise our agency, we don't compromise our independence as organisations. Oh, brilliant. Isn't that great? And, you know, we can bring our flags along. We can have our own speakers. We can have 12 speakers on a demonstration from all the different groups. They're all represented. How wonderful. But there's only one problem with this. And I remember the last demonstration that I attended in the northeast of England, and there was a group that I was affiliated with at the time, which is now banned, and we gathered up, we marshalled our guys, and we were all there in smart lines. And we had our flags out, and we were dressed black from head to toe in a fairly uniform sort of fashion. I should add one caveat here, it was not a uniform, it was merely a uniform appearance. But then we looked at our group, and then we looked at other groups. And what did we see? We saw cheap JD Sports flags with England on them, with writing on them. We saw men who were in their 50s and 60s who really should know better, who looked as though they'd been in the pub all day. They'd been getting the drinks down them, and they were getting nice and rowdy. And they were singing things like, Allah is a pedo, Allah is a pedo, na 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 na. And if you can, you do the bouncy, you're Islam. And things like this. And you can see the contrast in the groups. You can see the contrast with the approaches. Because one group wasn't for unity. One group was for the strong man as mightiest alone principle. One group was trying to embody an ideology of national socialism, the ideology of our national rebirth. Whereas others were trying to pull together people who had different ideologies, different worldviews. Some were more consistent than others. Some were more pro-Zionist than others. Some were harder on certain issues than others. Some wanted to send them all back. But they didn't quite understand the root of our problem, the internal degeneracy of the white race. And hence we had these two contrasting groups. One of young, disciplined men, organised by themselves, without any need from external, any need of external help, and the other comprised of men who weren't so young, but who didn't seem to know how to organise a piss-up in a brewery. Then there's the other form of unity that we hear talked about so much. That's organisational unity. That's the call of everyone. Just get together in our group. Just join our national alliance. And we'll have all the nationalists in this country together in one big organisation. Can you imagine that? No more of this disjointed, fragmented nationalist movement. No more of these groups holding, well, not even being able to hold conferences because their call-out has been so small. Wouldn't that be marvellous? Wouldn't that be marvellous? Be back in the glory days of the National Front, which fragmented how many times... For some of the older hands here, tell me, how many times did the National Front fragment? How many splinters have there been at the National Front?
Seven.
That's quite a lot. And I'm pretty sure within the first sort of 2-3 years, they tried getting rid of A.K. Chesterton, didn't they? And that sort of triggered a little bit of fallout.
1969, with...
So formed in 67,
yeah.
And by 69 they were already trying to off the... off the guy in charge.
Andrew Fontaine and A.K. Chesterton fell out.
Oh, wow. That doesn't set a good precedent, does it? And maybe people should have learnt that lesson, you know, should have learnt a lesson very early on there. But here we are, something like decades later. But people make this argument all the time. How many times have we heard for these calls of unity? Whether it's a call for a unity organisation, a national front, a nationalist alliance, or whether it's a unity demonstration, march for Britain, march for Brexit. No matter how many times you've heard these calls, every single time this strategy has been tried, it has failed. And we all know who the man was who said, the definition of insanity is to do the same thing again over and over, even though it fails. And I would say that unity is one of these things that we've got to get rid of completely. Stop thinking of our goal as being to unite the movement, because we're not a movement. Think of all the infighting there is. Think of all the backbiting there is. I'm not in a movement. I'm an independent person, unaffiliated with anyone. I'm certainly not part of a nationalist movement. Because for all I can see, the nationalist movement is like a den of vipers. And if anything that recent events have taught me is that these vipers, as soon as your back is turned, or as soon as you're at a weak point, they will bite you. And I am not going to allow myself to be put in a position of weakness where I can be bitten by a viper. And so, this call for nationalist unity. Fundamentally though, the problem is that it repudiates the idea of standards. And if this nationalist movement, or if a nationalist movement is going to come about that is going to have a realistic chance of winning this country back for the white people, it is not going to come from lowering our standards, from saying that the people who are going to represent our movement will be the lowest of the low, will be the people who have tattoos, who drink too much, who do drugs, who do these things that no honest or decent person will associate with. People who tolerate low-level criminality within their ranks. People who tolerate dishonesty, inconsistency, hypocrisy. And whenever you see these calls to unity, the first thing that happens is there is compromise. And let's put aside ideology for a while, because I know that there'll be people who disagree with me on ideology and think that the way that we should sell ourselves is different. Fair enough. But one thing that we must understand, whether it is you want to form a political party that is democratic and appeals to moderate people, conservative people, or whether it's you want to form an avant-garde vanguardist type organization that appeals to a revolutionary minority. But one thing you are going to need is standards. You can't have a revolution if your revolutionaries are in the pub, if your human material is worthless, is not physically fit, is not intellectually sharp, is not dedicated, and you cannot form a political party. If you don't have thinkers who can formulate policy, draft documents, who can fill in the forms and deal with the bureaucracy. Because we all know what will happen if you have a modicum of success. They will come after you. They will come after you through the Electoral Commission. They will come after you through the courts if your membership criteria doesn't quite fit the dogma of modern-day Britain, the multiracial dogma. Standards are important. Standards are necessary. And if we do not have these standards, we will not go anywhere. And this movement has adopted this horrendous attitude of a hug box. So we'll all get together and have a massive hug. And surely as nationalists, our appeal to this ideology, what made it so appealing to us, isn't because it caved into weakness, isn't because it tickled that little spot of us that's a little bit weak, but because it exhibited all of the good things in life, of strength, of vigour, of vitality. And yet our movement does not exhibit these things. And this mentality, and this call to nationalist unity, I think exhibits this sort of mentality, this loser mentality, this mentality that we can't do it on our own. Now surely if you're an organisation, if you're in a group, and you define yourself or affiliate yourself to a group, whether that's the NF, BNP, British Democratic Party, whatever, surely you must have faith in the modus operandi of that group. Surely you must have faith in your leaders, in the way that you're operating, that you can carry yourself to victory. Surely, otherwise you're wasting your time. What's the point in standing for elections, in going to demonstrations, in organising on the ground, if you don't think that what you're doing is going to carry yourself to victory? Surely that's a waste of time. Or at least that's what it seems like to me. But no, we have a loser mentality in nationalism. And nationalist unity is one of the symptoms of this. But I tell you what, I have faith. I have faith that the modus operandi that I follow and the ideology that I follow is the ideology that can win the day. It's the modus operandi that can win the day. And so I'm sticking to that. And I'm not buying into any of this unity rubbish. And why is it that nationalists have adopted this loser mentality? Why is it that nationalism has been one of these things where you can sort of get off the bus wherever you feel uncomfortable, or whatever point that you want to stop, that you don't want to go far enough, you can say, oh, that's me, I'm done, thanks. You know, if you go and, be a little bit naughty on a demonstration, you throw a couple of bricks, throw a couple of bottles, and you think, ooh, police are going to collar me, ooh, this is getting a little bit too hot for me, I want to get off, I want to capitulate, will you say, oh, it's fine? Or if you say, oh, well, I don't want to come out leafleting on this day because it's a little bit wet, or it's a little bit, the missus, she's giving me a hard time because I've been spending too much time with my, doing nationalist things, or, I've got a birthday, me and my mates are going out for a piss up, so I can't miss that, can I? It's my mate's 30th, oh. I know we've got some canvassing to do, but I can't miss that. I know the election's coming up. I know it's really important. But, I've got some extra shifts to do because, I've got a mortgage to pay. And this is an unserious kind of attitude. This isn't a revolutionary attitude. And I, for one, believe that revolution is important. Or at least hold a revolutionary mindset is important. The idea that what we're doing is trying to irrevocably change our society, to turn it around. And if we don't have that mentality to begin with, then we are not going to win. Why is it that we've adopted this? I think it's because, fundamentally, when nationalists prophesize about the future, and they say in 60, 70, 80 years' time, Britain will be a non-white country, I think a lot of nationalists approach these views in an academic kind of way. They don't see them as happening in their lifetime. So, you know, if what I'm doing is not really gonna see us all the way through to victory, well, there we are. But, you know, I'm doing something, and that's fine, isn't it? And that's what most nationalists do. I've heard it a million times. They console themselves and say, well, at least I'm doing something. You can't have a go at me. I'm at least doing something, you know. But that's a terrible attitude to have. Surely, on just the most minor examination of that, you can see that that isn't right. That isn't the right attitude to have. But that is why I'm very confident in the future. Because we are nearing that point of no return. That point where we will not have a second chance. In 30 years' time, when we become a non-white country, I'm still going to be here. People younger than me are still going to be here. And my kids are definitely going to be here. But a lot of nationalists won't be here. Or a lot of nationalists will be so old that the dementia will be setting in. They won't quite be senile. So they won't have to worry. And I think that's why there has been this lack of seriousness in our attitude. But us young nationalists, we can't afford to be complacent. Because in the area where I live, if you take away all the white students, we're already a minority. The place where I live in Swansea, the Muslims have just taken over a new mosque. Although, it's not really a mosque. It used to be a Presbyterian church. They are growing in number. They're growing in confidence. And before too long, there won't be any second chances. It will be too late. And everything that we do at that, after that point will come to naught because we will die as a race. And I'm not willing to let that happen. And so I say, the young nationalists in this country need to get serious. There aren't that many of us, sure. But that just makes it more challenging. And everyone knows that the best thing about a challenge is how hard it is and overcoming the difficulty of a challenge. And that is what the young nationalists in this country must do. As we all know, we've just had the first prescription of a nationalist organisation since the outbreak of the Second World War. That is unprecedented. That is an unprecedented level of oppression by the British state. Yet the young nationalists in this country are still here. We are unperturbed. And we will move forward, regardless of the cost. Because we know that unless we continue with what we're doing, unless we continue to organise ourselves politically, then we are not going to win. And the situation will get worse, and we will become a minority in our own country. I think of it like this. Everything that we've worked for in this country, everything we've built, has not come easy. We've not been given to it on a plate. The history teachers when I was at school might have said that we built an empire and we built our wealth on the back of African slavery. But we know that's not the case. We know that everything in this country that is worthwhile has been built on the exploitation of white working people. And everything that we have, our welfare state, our NHS, our benefit system, the fact that we can even form trade unions, didn't come to us because the ruling classes gave it to us, because they were nice people, because they thought, there we are, let's give the workers, let's give the scum, let's give the proles a little bit of crumbs from the table. They didn't do that. They did it because we struggled for it, because our ancestors struggled for it. Before the red flag of revolution was raised anywhere in Europe, before the Paris Commune, before the revolutions of 1848, The red flag of revolution was raised in Merthyr Tydfil, of all places, in 1831, where ordinary working people faced down the rifles of the state, the mercenaries of the ruling classes. And they rose up, and still today, they are remembered as great working class revolutionaries. And remember that we didn't get trade unions and those sorts of things without people being willing to be transported all the way to Australia just for trade unions, just for the right to organise as workers. We've had to struggle for that. And my point is that every single concession that working people and ordinary people in this country here today enjoy has been brought about through political organisation. And we are not going to get anywhere without political organisation. And whatever political, however much way you want to organise politically, it doesn't matter whether it's electorally, whether it's community-based, whether it's a counterculture, whether it's on the street, it doesn't matter. Whatever suits you, whatever you do that's productive, that's the important word, not as a waste of time, but actually gets results. Whatever you can do, do it. And if we don't organise politically, we're in deep water. And we need to understand this. And now, if you look at the situation that we're in, the race war that is being engaged on us by the elite, on our white race, is intensifying. There used to be a time when we knew the victims of murders by alien criminals. We used to know their names. Charlene Downs, Gavin Hopley, Chris Donald. How long ago was it that Gavin Hopley was murdered? Can anyone remember how long ago that was? How long ago it was that this war was started against us? It's a long time ago. But now, we don't know the names of the victims, the individual victims. We call them the 1400 in Rotherham, the 80 in Oxford, the 56 in Telford. They're now numbers. It's become not an isolated case of one or two here and there. It's now systematic. It's almost industrial scale warfare against our white race. And unless we get serious about this, guys, unless we get serious about it and learn that we've got to struggle, even if it means sacrificing ourselves and our comfort, even if it means not being able to go on that nice little holiday at the end of the year, even if it means having to take a little bit of flack from your mates and from your missus because you didn't take her out to a nice restaurant on the anniversary, even if it means that, we've still got to do it. And if it means we have to sacrifice even more than that, then so be it. Because we have to understand that if we're going to be serious about this, nothing is more important than our victory and the survival of our people on these islands. And so I'm going to say, to finish off, if we don't start thinking seriously and acting seriously, then we need to get out of this game. Because times are going to be tough. The ruling class are intensifying their oppression of us. The opposition are getting organised. The anti-fascists are getting organised. And they've been organised for a long time. If you don't think the political organisation works, then go to somewhere like Bristol or Cardiff or Newport, where anarchists on the ground have bases of support, have entrenched themselves in communities and hold real power. And I say to you, we have got to aim for real power. However we get it, that's got to be the aim. No half tracks, no compromises, victory or nothing. Thank you. We'll be right back.
www.theawakenedwhitemasses.com.